Okay, let's get started. So first off, just before I talk about anything, I just wanted to point out on the outline, I added it. Whoa, that's not what I want. This course software in the labs, I just added this section. It's expanded on from what was in the first tutorial, just saying that you can, you know the basic commands. One thing I added here is a little... if you forgot to run restore when you start using a VM and you still want to save what you've done, don't run the standard save command because that blows away everything on the FCS server in that comp2406 directory. Instead, run this command because what this does is all those aliases are aliases for rsync. And this is the same as the save alias, except that it gets rid of the dash dash delete and dash dash force. So this will merge, but this will overwrite any files that already exist there, but will not delete any files that exist in your account and that don't exist on your student account in the VM. So basic story, if you forget to do a restore and you want to keep stuff that's saved in your SCS account, use this command.
Got a little bit about running the virtual machine on your own boxes. So I
assume, do you all have this? How many of you are running the stuff purely in the labs? You aren't running it on your own machines at all. Okay, so purely the labs. How many of you are using your own Linux distribution? How many of you are using the class VMs but on your own boxes? Okay, that's like all the possibilities, which is interesting, because it's almost like roughly pretty evenly divided.
Interesting. Okay, so that's all there. So now the other thing I just wanted to talk about was assignment one. I don't, of course, want to give you all the answers to assignment one, because, well, it's an assignment, and part of this is... But I will answer some basic questions. I will, of course, talk about things about the assignment more in the lectures. But if there's anything in particular that seemed really what the heck is going on, I'm happy to field it. Yes?
What's a route?
What's a route? Okay, good. That is the how the heck does Node work question. So that is part of what I want to be explaining today. Other things. That's just a question I asked. I'm not going to. You gotta take it up a higher level. Can't answer this directly. You can probably get most of the answer out of me if you ask it directly, but I'm not going to make that easy. I want to be leaky in the information I give out. I'm not trying to keep secrets, but you gotta give me something here. So anything else? I can just start. My plan for today is to talk more about how Node is put together, because that seems very much what the assignment's based on. And then we've talked now about enough JavaScript features that I should be able to. Things.
Do you want me to sit somewhere else?
Well, the only issue is that the microphone's going to pick you up because you're right there.
Okay.
Just in case you. It's fine. I mean, it's just a big deal. Yes?
How often should we run the npm install?
Okay, that's part of how Node works. So we'll talk about that. Other things? Yes?
Do you want more than one sentence?
For part A, no. Part A, I'm just looking for like really short explanations. So if you give more of an explanation, it's fine. But I really see part one as more of a, did you do it and think about it some? If you just didn't bother doing it, then you're not going to get the point. But if you made a reasonable effort, you'll get the point. The TAs are not going to spend a lot of time nitpicking your answers on part A. Part B and C, those are the ones that are worth 5 to 10 points each. They're going to really have to read those and think through those. But part A, it's like, just do it and see what happens. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So I have not explained forms yet.
Yeah.
So that is something else I need to explain. Although you should actually be able to get most of the idea from forms, functionally from just playing with it. But I will tell you more about that. So basics of Node and forms are two on the list. Yeah. And then if I don't cover that by the end of class, then you know, if I start getting towards the end of class and I haven't covered that, let me know.
I'm not sure if you expect paragraphs and sentences or dots is okay for the answers.
So point form answers can suffice, but the problem is they often are ambiguous. So while you don't have to answer in complete sentences, anything that makes it harder for the TAs to understand your answers is bad. So I would suggest explaining as fully as you can. And take the time. I mean, it shouldn't be that much writing. But if it turns out the easiest way for you to understand what you're saying is to put it in point format, it just seems very clear in your answer, then okay. They're not grading for grammar and stuff. You're grading they want you to communicate the answer, so it takes them as little time to understand what you said. So make it clear. And in general, that means less rather than more. Okay? So let's go ahead and what did I want to do here? I want to look at the code here, because this is a good example of a Node application. So the thing I want to talk about first is we want to do a little bit of inference from looking at this code. So you'll notice at the top of app.js, there are these lines, var express and routes. So from what we've talked about JavaScript, what is the var keyword there for?
Local.
So it's local. So what does local mean in the context of Node? What do you think the scope is of those variables?
The file.
The file. Yes. In the case of Node, this is that scope is a file. So really, in a case of a web page, you could say each web page is its own. Has its own scope for something if you do something at the top level. Here, the scope of this will be the file. And you'll notice that, do we have var? Yeah, we don't really have vars anywhere else in this. But this should give you an idea that in Node in general, if you want to specify a variable that is global to a file, but private to that file, this is a way to specify it. And do you think it's persistent or ephemeral? What do you think the duration of that variable is? It acts like a static in a C file. In other words, it's for the duration of the code in here existing. So basically, this allows you to create globals that are local to a file. So this will persist beyond every function or anything that's defined here. This will be forever. So, I don't know, would that be useful for any of the stuff that you're doing inside of this assignment? Just saying. Then so what you're doing is you're saying there's two variables, express and routes. And they're attached to these things, require express and require ./routes. So, what do you think the difference is between the ./ versus no ./ in these two files?
It's in a folder called routes.
They're all referring to folders, but what's the ./ for?
Current directory.
So the idea is that if you just have a name, Node is going to look for that module. So this is how modules are included in Node, is by these requires lines. So if you just have a name, it's going to search for it where it expects modules to be. If you instead specify a path in there, relative or absolute. But if you just want to say a directory that's in the same directory, a subdirectory of the current directory where app.js is, or whatever file you are putting this in, you just give the relative path. So dot is the current directory slash routes. This is referring to saying require the routes directory. And do we have a directory called routes in this, you know, in this application? Yes. And we'll look at the code in a second. Express, that's somewhere else. Where would you expect to find things like Express?
Wherever the source for node is defined on your machine.
Yes, but you've already seen code being referenced in your setup of the application. Remember you're doing that whole npm install? What npm install does is it populates the node modules directory. That the node modules directory is what is searched by this command. But in fact, there are potentially multiple node modules directories on your system. Some of them that are system directories, other of them specific for your application. So all this says is look for the express directory in some of the node modules directories that exist on the system.
Use that one more time.
So it says you want to be including the code from the express directory in one of the node modules directories that are included in the search path. One of the node modules directory that's searched is the one that's in your current directory, and there's other ones that the system has. Like, well, I happen to have installed Express globally on your virtual machines. So there is it's not in your home directory, but there's elsewhere there's a directory with the Express installed. So here's Express, routes.
So the question now is, what is this doing to the other file? Now, looking at Express, we'd have to look in the system models, but we can look to see what this requires does here, which is we have something called routes slash index.js.
So whenever you include, when you refer to a directory, you're actually referring to the index.js in that directory. Does this convention remind you of anything? If you played with web servers, whenever you specify a path, like used to say, content or something, it'll look in content index.html normally. Or index.htm. That's how web servers are classically configured. So Node takes that pattern and says, when you have a subdirectory, it says include that directory, look at the index.js. So that requires is basically telling it to load this code. But what are the names of the... So we've got two methods defined here. But those methods are methods of what object? It's exports object. So it's exports here.
But if we go up here, index and add. Oh, I did not want that. So you'll see that we have a... here we go. So you see here we got routes.index, routes.add.
They aren't exports.add. They aren't exports.index. They're routes. How'd that name get assigned?
When we load into the module, when we're calling route.add, we're finding the add function in route, which is using the export.
So basically, I'll try to say it another way. I think what you said is correct. Let me try saying it a different way. Which is, you see this routes here, that line? It's a, when you say require .slash routes, what it does is it evaluates that file. That file, it assumes, defines an exports object, and that exports object is assigned to this identifier. So whatever you defined as exports in that thing will be defined by this name here. Now notice anything else that's defined in that file cannot be accessed. Each file that's loaded in, each module, is its own private namespace. Think of it like a, it's like a private class or something like that. But it's just everything you do in there is isolated to that file. Only things that are seen externally are associated with that exports object. So all your public methods that you'd want to, you know, to create, you assign it to the exports object, and then those get exported here. And so we've now got a routes object, which has two methods. And those methods then are used later on to define routes, which we'll explain in a second. But I just want to talk about this, I'm looking at the mechanics of this module inclusion. Because this is, it's a very simple mechanism. It's just using the scoping rules that we were talking about before. It's just, I have one file, I say there's one, it has its own scope there, and I want to be able to move things out of it. And so Node has built in this notion that the exports object is a special object. And so if this file is included as a module by the requires code, it's going to look for the exports object. And it will map it over, build a bridge between those scopes. So you'll see this a bunch of times. This is a basic building block pattern. So if it's a bit mysterious, think about it more. But if there's any questions that come to mind, let me know.
You have to physically write the export function in the file that you call.
Yes, if the module, whatever you're requiring, so anything you require, you normally specify a directory. In that directory, you'll have an index.js file. In that index.js file, you need to have an exports object.
Okay, so you have to have it if you include it.
Well, if you don't, there's nothing to, otherwise the exports module will be an empty object. It won't have anything to it. So the pattern that people do with modules is they'll actually write their code completely normally. And then at the very end of the file, they'll have in a couple of lines that'll assign values to exports. It'll say, you know, index will be just a top level thing and add, and then you'll say index.exports.add equals add. Exports.index equals index. So you won't see the exports thing anywhere in it except for at the end. But since there's just two, you just did it on the fly. Yes?
So for the first code in app.js, you had export or express. So in express, there will be an index that also has all these export
functions. Yeah, exactly. You go and look at the express thing, you will find an index.js. And in the index.js will be a bunch of exports. Now, of course, what it may do is it may delegate some of the exporting to other parts. Like it may actually export some of them and then add in the methods. It may build it up in multiple ways. But at the end of the day, there's an exports object, and that exports object is what's getting turned into Express here. And so all the things you're calling in app.js. So like for example, so app, you're calling. So this is kind of a funny line, because this isn't strictly necessary. You don't use this anywhere else. I think this is actually more for backwards compatibility. But here, app gets express.create server. So now we're calling express. That's an object. It has a method, which came from this module called create server. That returns an object, which is assigned to app. App is an object that has a bunch of methods, including configure, set, and use. And so now we call those. Those all originally came from Express.
but via this constructor called create server. And you call that and you pass it these various parameters, some of which involve other methods, calling other methods. Yes?
Can you now export from say Express to a different object? To a different variable set?
So if you're talking about exports, you're talking about a module. So if we did any exports, if we assigned the exports object in app.js, it would only make sense if we were including this code as a module for something else. Now that's actually a common design pattern, because actually when you look at Node, modules are stacked on top of modules are stacked on top of modules. In fact, when you ran npm install, it was installing all of the modules that were required by the code. And you notice it wasn't loading one or two files. It kind of recursively grabbed all kinds of stuff. It's that's because when you look at Express depends upon connect. Connect depends upon like all this HTTP stuff. It's this whole big mess of dependencies. It downloads megabytes of code into your directory. It does this when you run npm install. So that it's normal for modules to be based on other modules. Like when you look in Express, it will have its own requires line. And each of the things that it requires may have its own requires lines. Yes?
So basically, that's like including a file, and you're calling methods from that other file that you include? Is that what's going on here?
Well, yeah, you're including that file. But when we say including a file, what's happening is that file is getting evaluated. What it means is it's being stuck into the interpreter. It's reading all that code, and it's running it. But what running that code does is it defines a bunch of functions and objects.
So do we have to actually define the functions in that code that we...
Yeah, that other code. Yeah, that just like here, the routes module
defines two functions, which are methods. And so when this is loaded, when we did that required line happen, this entire file was loaded. And that means everything in here was run. But running it means that this two functions were created. The functions weren't called because there's no invocations of those functions. But they were just created, and then in them they have this other code which will be called whenever the function is called. So this now gets to routing, which is when you call, so we define these functions here, this res render. So first, what do you think this res render thingy is? Certainly it seems important. So you all know what the word render is, right? So when you render something, so the classic use case for rendering is when you take, it's in graphics. When you take some representation and you actually instantiate, like rendering a ball might be, okay, the ball has the shape and stuff, and we do the wireframe, and then let me apply textures to it, and then we apply the lighting and stuff, and then now I have a fully rendered ball in 3D graphics. But rendering is a more general thing of taking some declaration and fully instantiating it. So what these are doing is rendering the web pages. This is providing the calls to the code for rendering these web pages. But now, but the rendering is a little funny. Here it says res render, and then it has this add, and then it has this stuff. So, first off, what do you think this stuff is? First off, the title. Okay, that's a title. Okay, parameter to the rendering thing for creating the web page. Here's the web page's title. Sure. But this one has this other stuff here.
Looks like a constructor.
It is kind of, because you're constructing a web page. But there's data here.
It shows up.
Hmm?
This is what shows up after you click.
Right. This is what creates the page. In fact, what we've defined earlier, the renderer that we've set up with Express, the default renderer is Jade. There's multiple ways of rendering web pages. When I say rendering web pages, you could have just had an HTML file that was just included literally. But in general, you want to create web pages programmatically. for example, you want some sort of repeating element in the web page. So there are a whole bunch of languages for doing this. One of them is Jade. This is the one that we're using in this class. But you could say PHP is in some ways a rendering language because it was always designed to, you'd have HTML above and below, and then you'd have a little bit of PHP code, which when run would produce HTML that would get inserted into the web page. Jade instead provides a template for the entire page that is then filled in with parameters. So these are parameters in the Jade code. Yes?
So we're not going to write the Jade code, but we're going to access it to...
Well, no, you wrote Jade code. Your Jade code's right here, these .jade files. And you see that here's your index, and here's your layout, and here's add. So look, this was referring to exports add and add here. So now there's a couple of different things that are here, but this add is referring to the add.jade. It's referring to the Jade description of the add page. So this add is telling us use this. And you'll notice this template for a web page takes four parameters. It wants a name, a country, a date, and an email. Those are filled in here, name, country, date, email. That's where they came from. So this describes what the HTML page will look like. See, it's got an H1 header, and there's other stuff, and then this add.jade will also get this layout will be put on top of it. So this is how you get your web page. But then in order to make the web page, it has to have stuff to fill in. And the fill-in stuff comes from these, and the value of these four parameters comes from rec, body, name, rec, body, country, rec, body, birthday, rec, body, email.
Yes?
How does the render method actually find these? Because you haven't passed it a directory, so it must just kind of programmatically look through the whole file structure to finally find a JSON file with that name.
Well, let's look here. Let's see, where is the... So, set views is in / views. Where's the Jade code? In views. And the app set view engine, set to Jade.
Express supports multiple engines. Node supports multiple rendering engines. Here we're saying use the Jade one. So that means in the views directory, that's all Jade code. Use Jade to generate the pages.
Okay, I have another question.
Yes?
You know yet that dot backslash means current directory?
Uh-huh.
What is just a backslash?
That's just a pre... So here, this is doing string concatenation.
Oh.
So underscore during, what do you think that means? The directory where this file is. Turns out this code needs an absolute path. So you could have instead said .slash views, but this code wants the absolute path. And it turns out it needs that because it will actually be in other subdirectories and stuff. So if you did it relatively, it's all confusing. So it needs an absolute path, but you don't want to go around specifying the absolute path because then if you put your code in another directory, it would break. That would be dumb. So instead of hard coding a path, there's this thing called underscore for dirname, which gives you the full path, the full directory path, of this piece of code.
Okay. And are those two underscores or is it one?
It's two.
Okay.
Two underscores, and then so there, and then you append to it / views. So wherever you put this in your file system, it'll be that, with the directory where app.js is, and it'll just add on views. So logically, this is the same thing as .slash views, although since we're passing this as a parameter to a module, which we're running it actual stuff from a different directory, we need to give it the full absolute path. Because it's relative path.
And if it wasn't the current directory, you write it like the second one?
Dot. Mm-hmm. One thing is
so like app.setViewEngineJ, that's the current directory?
Oh, the view engine Jade?
You know, you said it's more complicated when it's not in the current directory, so that's how you said it?
No. What I was just saying is that this code here is kind of similar to this ./routes.
But
we don't say ./routes here because this is being passed on to this other code, to this thing that will be used at a later time by other code that will potentially be in a different directory.
Okay.
So if it looked in its current directory, the code wouldn't be there because it's in the current directory of app.js, not where it is. So we have to specify the absolute path, and we figure out what the absolute path is dynamically by using this variable. And the plus is string concatenation.
But you see, so this is kind of the cool thing about Node and Express that I really like, is that you got, well, how is it getting that? It's all there, just about. I mean, there's a few conventions, but mostly it's actually rather explicit how it's doing everything. It's like, you're using this thing called Jade. Why are you using it? Because you told it to use it. This is just auto-generated code, but you see the line right there that does it.
And so if you decide, I don't like it being called views. I want it to be called web pages. What do you think you do? Change that. It'll work fine. So getting back, what was I talking about here? Was I was saying we have this name, country, date, and email. They're going to the Jade template. And the way the Node code knows what to give them is they're assigning it from this object. There's this object called request, and it has another object that's a subpart that's called body. And those seem to have four fields that gives us the name, country, birthday, and email. Where did this data come from? What is the ultimate source? You've used the app, so where did this thing come from? Text fields, yes, which were inputted by the user. These came from the text fields that you defined on the form for the user. Somehow, that stuff that was typed in by the user is now being seen in Node as this. It's probably this rect body stuff. You type it in there, and somehow it shows up on the server this way. Yes?
Is this the pound in brackets thing that came up in?
Well, so the pound brackets notation is Jade notation for the variable. So that's pure server side. So it comes from here. This is generating the rendering code. This is passing this information on to the template, which is here, the add J. So this is the last stage. This is going to produce a web page, and the web page get returned to the browser. But before that page got, there was, you know, so this is the add results page. But before that, there was this page, the index page, which provided the form that lets you type in values.
So like the layout?
So layout is included by these other ones. Layout is used as a basically a header for all of these. Because otherwise, you don't strictly need layout, but otherwise you'd have to put these on the beginning of every page. So the idea is to factor out anything that you don't need to have and you know, that doesn't change, that's static. Like for example, if you had certain logos or other things or standard code that was included in all your pages, you could put them in the layout and then have the things that vary in the other ones. It's just reducing redundancy.
Where are the three exclamation points for at the top?
So if you look at the declaration for Jade, three exclamation points is short for the standard headers that go on web pages, which is like, what is it, HTML, it's like the HTML tag or something. There's like a couple of things that you're saying for the kind of page, and if you just put three exclamation points, it puts in its default value.
This is all stuff needed for the standard syntax. I will look that up for you right now, just so I can show you what I'm talking about. Jade template engine, language reference. So, commonly used doc types. So instead of doc types, by default, where is it? The doc types. So this is for the, oh, yeah, so to add a doc type, use doc type or three exclamations for short, followed by an optional value, which defaults to HTML. So that's getting turned into doc type HTML. The three exclamation points. So this is a file you should probably be looking at quite a bit to figure out how to use Jade. And in particular, notice that in addition to seeing how the stuff gets translated into HTML, there's other cool stuff here which you will probably need, such as for loops. And, well, escaping, but in particular things like for loops and, well, the contents might also be useful, or conditionals. But in particular, you'll notice in the assignment, you're going to have to render a page of variable length which will have repeated elements. That's what template engines are really nice for.
So does Jade, when you run the code, does the Jade code translate that stuff into HTML?
Yes.
And then the browser reads
that HTML. Well, then Node sends that HTML back to the browser, and the browser renders it. Exactly. Because that's a web server. It's going to render the, create the page, and then the browser renders it. But there's like two stages of rendering. There's the rendering that happens to the server, which is turning Jade into HTML. And then on the browser, the HTML is getting turned into the bits that you see in graphics on your screen.
That's the HTML, the last part?
The last part is HTML to whatever graphics are on your system. That's also a rendering phase. So it's multiple stages. But this information here, when you say rec body, when we say rec, what does this rec mean?
It's saying request. Because what you did when you had the form
is this generated a page. It views index.jade generated a form. And in particular, it had an action. So it says method post. Yeah, that's right. It says method post action add. So that's saying when you do the action for the form, which is initiated by the submit, what it will do is it will do a post to the URL /add. So when you're talking about web, we're talking about the web technology, we're talking about the HTTP protocol. And we'll talk in more detail about HTTP. We don't actually need to know the details of it, for the most part, in this class, because it's all nicely abstracted away. But what you do need to know is there's two basic types of HTTP requests a browser makes to the server. Well, really four, but for rules to say, we'll stick to the first two that are most commonly used. Get and post. Get says, give me a page. Post says, here's some information. Now, the funny thing is, in syntax, get and post are actually very, very similar. And you can use post as gets and gets as post if you want to do things. But what you're supposed to do is treat gets as requests for information and posts as sending information to the server. So in response, so this whole page initially was retrieved by the browser by a get for slash for the top level page. It got that, this got returned. Your browser now sitting there, you're interacting with the form, you're typing in your values, then you hit submit. Your browser then initiates a post, and that post is to the URL /add, and as part of the post, it includes in the body of the post all of the values you specify. And the names it gives to the values are the names.
This file is created, right? This one. Do we actually write this part? Or is it?
What do you mean?
Do we code this part? Or is it just made?
No. This was hand-coded.
Oh, this is hand-coded.
This was hand-coded. Yeah, this is your form. This is hand-coded. This is not auto-generated.
Well, the way you can figure out what's auto-generated, this is why you run the Express as you did in the first tutorial. You'll see the skeleton that Express produces for you. And I'll tell you, the things that I've changed are not many. I created this file.
So let's look at all these things. What did I do to, you know, that's a good question. Did I change this package.json? No, that was auto-generated. App.js, I made minor changes. Basically, I added like this line right here. I don't think I made any other changes to this. I think I just added that one line. Style sheets, that was included. The index.js, I tweaked this index and I added add. Because that was a URL that wasn't able to be processed, was the add thing. And then I modified the layout index and jade and add funds.
So the only auto-generated file was the first one?
Well, I'm seeing the layout.jade and index.jade were auto-generated, but I heavily changed them.
Yeah.
And this one, this part is basically the same as it was, although I changed the title. The style sheet was auto-generated. And this file is basically auto-generated except for the additional thing. And so now here, look. app get/routes.index. app post/add/routes.add.
What this is saying is when you get a get request for slash run routes.index. When you get a post request for slash add, run routes.add. So this is a web server. So we've gotten a request for a URL via some means. And so the response to that request will be generated by this code. Yes.
Your app get and app post, those can only be HTML verbs or whatever they call them, right?
They can only be what, sorry?
Those HTML verbs, like it can only be...
So strictly speaking, these are just methods of the app object. They don't, but they happen to be the same as the things. And of course, there's actually a little bit of overlap here because you can also use get to request properties of certain objects. Express things, but when you say get and post and you give it a path fragment, a URL fragment, then it will treat it as adding to the routing table. So when we talk in general about routing, we're talking about, if you think of like package routing, how does, say, a company like FedEx get a package from point A to point B? Does anyone know how FedEx works?
Through a series of hubs.
So, the biggest hub is in Memphis. It used to be their only hub. They now have more hubs. So what it means is Memphis, Tennessee. I have friends who live very close to that place, actually. Family, actually. So, in Memphis, what would happen is all the packages get retrieved to their local FedEx place, the FedEx place near the airport in their respective cities. Then planes from there go to Memphis, go to a big sorting center that decides where everything goes. They get back on planes, go back out, back to cities, and get on the vans and get delivered out. So routing is about how do you make sure that package goes from this point, to here, to there, to get where it's supposed to go. And that's similarly, a router inside of a node application is about defining how does information flow through the application. In particular, when you get a request, how does that request get mapped to the appropriate response? So the router is the one that decides when you get a request for a given URL, what's the response supposed to be? In a classic static web server, routing is very simple because you just give it a path. And that path is a file. And so you just go, figure out what the file is, and then you return the contents of the file. But here, the mapping between the URLs and files, there is no direct mapping. It's, I give it this string, and then it figures out what the route is, means the appropriate mapping, and then you get a file coming out, the HTML file that gets sent back. Yes?
Is there a way to pass additional information between app.js and the routing functions that you're specifying there? Like, for example, like an array of previous submissions?
So you don't want to, well, so there's separate things. You can define stuff in the routes file that will be persistent. You can define an object that will be there. In general, the way you maintain state is by having a backend database that would push stuff there. We'll talk about the database part later. But as far as passing along here, you really don't, you're not really calling this here. You're just associating the two. When will this code get called? It'll be called when the web browser does a get or a post on those URLs. Otherwise, this code won't be run at all. If you never ask, never do a post to slash add, and you never does a get for slash, neither of those are getting called. If you just ask for some strange URL, it's just going to say, hey, I don't know that route, and it will generate an error page. Well, actually, what it will generate will depend on whether it's in production or development mode. So the idea is if it's in development mode, it will give you a stack trace. If it's in production mode, it won't give you a stack trace. And the reason why you don't want to give a stack trace in production mode is because it tells how your app works, and that's really bad for security purposes. Don't return errors to attackers. Just tell them it didn't work. Basic rule of thumb. But if you're a developer, you really want to know what happened. So keep it in development mode for this class. But you see, this code is getting called in a completely different context. It's getting called in the context of a request. And that context is actually supplied by the browser that's making the request. And that's why when you go down here
to this, you know, when we're calling the Jade code and we're filling in its template, we're saying, okay, we want a name, country, date, and email. Here you're saying, well, here's the body name, the country, birthday, email is all coming from the request. See, there's a request and the response. It's a function that takes two things as parameters. Is inside that function. So we know whenever this function, export.as defines a function, whenever it gets called, it'll give a request and a response. The request and the response is basically the template for the response that's going to be sent back. And that is, since it's being called by ResRender, it'll be able to access. Well, actually, I think it just uses return. So I don't think response actually gets used by this code. But you call render, it's now going to give an add. And it's going to get the contents of what was sent to the web server as a body of the request. Name, country, birthday, email were put in the body of the request that was sent from the web page. And the reason why they were sent by the web page is because we told it to in the form.
That's what these name tags are here for, is to give names to these fields which are filled in. You send the form to the web server, the web client. Web client equals browser. So the browser then, you type in your name, the browser says, okay, I've got the contents for this stuff. You don't hit the submit, generate the post request. Post request goes out and includes this as its body, all these parameters. They're sent to the server.
And the server then sticks them in the page and returns them back. Now, there's something very dangerous about the way this is constructed right now. Oh, I'll take a break. Let's take just 3 minutes.
Okay, so, is your brain full yet? So don't panic if you feel this all feels very confusing, because this is a lot of stuff here. This is what, in some ways, this is an overview of the content I want to cover for the first test, much of it, because I'm basically telling you how Node works. I'm giving you an overview of how the pieces fit together. There's a few pieces, but hopefully once you think about this and play with it some and work on the assignment, it'll actually all fit together and you go like, oh, that's it. That's all that's happening. Because it isn't that complicated. The only The only real tricky part is you have to realize that when you're writing this application, you're writing a client-server application, and some of the stuff is being sent to the client, which is producing code or code-like things, which is then sending stuff back to your server. And you have to be very distinct about those two roles. And the notion that where is the data getting passed? Because it's not at all how you build regular desktop applications. You have a web server. You have a web client. Client and server exchange messages. The server sends back web pages. The client sends web requests, get and posts. That's the communication, just like we talked on the first day. It's all instantiated in this simple web application, which is actually consists of like three or four languages. There's HTML underlying the Jade. There's HTML, Jade, CSS, and JavaScript. So, a bit of a mess. But you're, so here's the thing. How mysterious does the Jade part seem? I can spend some time explaining Jade too, but I get a feeling that that's a lot simpler than the other stuff. Do you want me to spend some time explaining now Jade first, or should I could keep going for the node parts more? Yes?
Can you explain the add-on part?
Ah, right. So this is all just saying that the labels that you're specifying should go right after the field that you're creating. That's an HTML thing. So HTML is a language that I'm not going to try explaining in huge detail in this class. And in fact, the real way to do fancy HTML is you don't do it yourself. What you do is you grab libraries. And the libraries take care of the details. You just have to understand the structure. The big thing to understand about HTML, if you're looking at Jade, it actually kind of... HTML is basically, it's a markup language with tags. And the tags all have angle brackets, where the start of a tag is, you have it with just the name of the tag, and then it matches by a closed one, which starts with a slash. This is the basic format of XML, XML and HTML, both of which are descendants of SGML, which is standard generalized markup language. Now, you might ask, what the heck do these things mean? Well, if it's XML, you actually define a schema, which defines what the tags mean. In HTML, there's a bunch of tags that have default meanings. Things like B for bold, or I for italic, or A for links. And you can have parameters within the tags. So let's see, where's the...
Do they show any links? Like, for example, here, you want to define links. So a classic link is... So ahref. So you always say href, normally for the URL that you want for a link. So A, and that's a parameter to it, and then... Cool, here. But so in the context of of Jade, this is the syntax you give.
Now, why is Jade syntax a bit nicer than HTML syntax? Great. One thing I like about it is that it's very clear that you don't have to say the ending tags so much. You don't have to deal with lots of angle brackets. The way nesting is defined, so there's implicitly a nesting that happens in HTML documents, because you have tags inside, nested tags inside nested tags. The nesting is specified in Jade through indentation. So indentation in Jade files is very important. It's kind of Python-ish in that way. I just find that when I could have chosen something else, but it turns out Express uses Jade by default, and it's one of the cleanest these template language for generating JavaScript. For generating HTML that I've seen. So,
but you're not going to have to deal with many tags. You know, also, then what's the so A is for links. So you see input. So this is for creating the field like we did for the form. Then there's IMG tags. That's for specifying images. Then there's tags for lists. There's unordered lists or ordered lists, OL or UL. And then these are list items. So instead of having this all syntax, you just do your list items like this. That'll make you, this will give you a bulleted list. Other things that are, you know, paragraphs, instead of having the paragraph at the beginning and the end, you put the P. You can also put regular tags in there if they aren't specified as part of Jade. But the real useful stuff is when you get into conditionals, and what you'll need in particular is for loops, which was right here.
So you'll notice this is for var x equals 0, you put a dash in front to specify its code. X equals 0, x is less than 3, x plus plus. It just produces whatever's after it how many times. Notice there's no open brace, closed brace, anything like that. The way that you know that this is there is because it's indented under the dashes. So, this is a language for generating HTML pages. Designed to be simple, expressive, and easy to read.
Yeah. I mean, you think this looks ugly? It's not the prettiest. I'll agree, but look at it, do a view source on the page when it's actually rendered, it's much worse. This is, I think, much easier to manipulate by hand. That was the other type. So div is for divisions. So it's just to specify. I don't think I. Oh. It's shut down. Okay, projector. That's really weird. It like flicked. Yeah. Okay.
It might let me turn it on in a few minutes after it's turned off completely, but
maybe it overheated.
Yeah, it might have overheated, but okay, I guess that's my hint to go to the chalkboard. I try to listen to the universe when it tells me such things. Okay, so there we go. So what was I talking about just now?
Divs.
Okay, so. So in a web page, you need to specify divisions. So by themselves, divs do not do much in the way of formatting. You're essentially specifying a block. You say div, this, and then you'd say, maybe have another one, you know. You're just dividing up your content in a hierarchical way. The main purpose of div tags is to provide a way of specifying formatting and layout for these portions. So using cascading style sheets, you can say that this entire region is supposed to be, you know, supposed to have an outline around it, it's supposed to be in bold text with this font and stuff that, and well, this div will be formatted some other way or so. It's just a region, but you can specify various rendering attributes to that. So in the original version, so you'll see another version of this demo later on when we start talking about JavaScript and CSS. And when we do that, you'll see those div tags get decorated, and then it will look much prettier than it does in the current version. But they're just ways of specifying the layout. Otherwise, you just have fields and stuff without that. That kind of makes sense? Okay. So.
you'll see more of this again. But again, the thing I'm not going to, I will show you various things about HTML as they seem necessary as we go along, but it's not a big focus of this class, simply because it's a very complex area on its own, but it's mostly details. It's basically I'll be teaching you, almost graphic design, if I really wanted to teach you HTML and all the nuances of it.
So,
well, let's see CSS.
So, what happens is the server sends the HTML. So,
yep.
Say you go to a website and you look at the HTML code for that website,
mm-hmm.
It's most likely generated by JavaScript, right? Or a server.
So what's happened for most web pages you go to nowadays, the HTML you look at may have hand-coded portions, but most of it will be programmatically generated. And the things that will generate the code will not, Node is there, and Jade is there, but they are not the most common ones by any means. The things that have generated it are things like PHP, Java server pages, Java server pages, ASP. What does ASP stand for? Application server pages? But
Microsoft.
Active, right. Active server pages, which is Microsoft's technology. Ruby on Rails will have generated this. There's a whole bunch of technologies for generating. In fact, actually, when I say these things, they actually have their own rendering label for the stuff. This is the one scary thing about the web technology. There's so many ways of doing the same things. So there's a whole bunch of ways of doing this. But those things run on the server. They take some template and turn it into a web page, and that web page gets sent there. And the way that template gets instantiated is by certain things being filled in by content from the server, from a backend database, or from user-supplied input.
So, if you want to, use a website style, could you technically
copy it? Yes. Very much so. If you see the style on your browser, you could copy it. Because you have the entire web page, and you can download all the CSS. There is no real copy protection in the web when you're talking about layout. And in fact, that's what people often do, is they grab the layout from one web page and get all the CSS and assets and things and then try making it something else. Of course, that's copyright infringement. If your web page gets indexed, they can also search for their assets and see that your web page includes them. So Google will tell everyone that you're using their content.
Mm. They check?
Huh?
They check?
Some people do. So people look for their index. There's definitely been people looking for things. And what's even worse is like you use the image from your server. Though that's always fun, because people notice that they include like your some fancy chart or some picture or something that they put on their web page, but it's coming from your web server. Then you can change it on your web server and say, look, this guy's stealing from me, and it will show up in their web page. So. You don't want to do that. But people, protection is a big issue. You're sending it to everyone to be rendered. So in fact, actually, I encourage you to start looking at the source of web pages that you visit. You can start seeing these patterns, especially as you start seeing the JavaScript and stuff. But don't start off with the Google pages. They're very complicated, as are any of the really active ones. I mean, if you want to look at something, like look at my homepage. My homepage is really boring. Really boring stuff, because it's a static page, you can just see it, it's
bad.
In fact, I actually had a high school friend of mine looked at my homepage a few years back and said, here is a CSS style file, please apply it to your web page, because your page is just so ugly, it hurts my eyes, just put this on there and it will look pretty. And I did. it looks better now.
Not, I wouldn't say good, but better. So what else do I want to cover here? Okay, so you should have this mental model of
web pages going from Node, coming back as requests. Whenever you want to find out what got sent back was a URL and a body associated with that request. That URL that came with the request, what process is that? Well, that's what the routing infrastructure does.
it parses the URL that comes in and splits it out and says, oh, was it for ads? Was it for Slack? So you normally don't even look at the URL. But the body of the request, or anything that's specified like with question marks or something, or with GET requests, those get turned into arguments that you can then access from your code programmatically. So there's a lot of magic happening behind the scenes that you don't normally have to think about. But you just have to know that create something on the web. You create a web page. If it's going to send stuff back to the server, you can create a form. It'll get back, and you'll get these arguments, and you can process them. It's easier to play with than to talk about, actually. Which is actually why I started off with the tutorial and with this assignment rather than just trying to explain this all first. If you played with it, you now see some of it. I think it will be clearer as you write more of this.
Later on, are we gonna? Is one of our assignments gonna be using like a backend database for Heroku?
That's after the. Yeah. We'll be using a backend database in the second half. This half, I just want to try getting you comfortable with Node and server-side JavaScript. So note, it does this web application use any client-side JavaScript?
Were you asking a question?
Does this application, the form demo, does it have any client-side JavaScript? No, not at all. If I wanted to add client-side JavaScript, how would I add it? Where would I have to put it?
Depends on the context. Like you can add it either at the end, very end, before you close the HTML file, or at the header.
No, well, that's kind of a general thing, but in your Node application, where would you put it? That your?
Or in the template?
Yeah. In the J template, you'd embed references to the JavaScript. Just like you add a script tag, but normally you wouldn't put all the code there. You'd put just small references to your code, the calls to the code. And the main code you'd put into a file that would be included in your thing, and that you would serve statically. You would code that up and put that in /public. You know, there's a public JavaScript directory. You would just dump a JavaScript file there. That would be programmed, and that would be sent as is to the browser. And then in your template, you can reference that code. But you notice that JavaScript code is completely separate from the JavaScript that's running in Node.
Example of that, would that be like, you know those YouTube 10 to 3 websites,
mm-hmm. where it converts it? Did they
send a piece of JavaScript to your browser and then your computer translates the
URL to
your, yeah? Or would they do it on their server?
In principle, nowadays, you're getting to the point where you could do it on the client, but most of those services do it on the server. And yes, that does take quite a bit of resources.
So last bit, I've got a couple more minutes here. I just want to talk about, well, that's not what I wanted. I have not talked about that. So, there's not enough really to talk about all those things. I was talking about the different invocation methods. No, I don't want to talk about that, sorry. I'll just talk about the arguments array. So anytime you call a function in JavaScript, there's a thing called arguments. This symbol is bound inside of your function. You don't have to define it explicitly. That automatically gets bound. And what it gets bound to is an array with all the arguments. So you might think for a second, why do you need an array? Why would you want this array to access arguments when you already have names for all the arguments that came to your function? What's the purpose of this?
Variable length of arguments.
Right. You can have a function that takes an arbitrary number of arguments. You don't have to, but this is like VA args, I think, the macros in C, where you can specify an arbitrary number of arguments. Here, the same way, but this is a lot easier to use. You can have it, you can have a function that has only one named argument or no named arguments, and it could take 20. And it just gets processed, and it'll just get assigned to this array, arguments array, and then your program can just go through it. Notice the, you know exactly how many elements are in this array because you always have a dot length method that you can call on an array to find out. So, very handy. The last thing I want to talk about which might be of use is push. So in a language like C, if you want to implement a stack, you have to do some work. Because you know, it's an array, you can do label, where you also have the types in them and things like this. But in a language like JavaScript, an array is basically already a stack for you, which means it dynamically grows and shrinks. So you have an array with 5 elements, you treat it like a stack, and you push an element on top of it. And then it'll go to 6. Or you can pop and remove it. Now, push and pop, I'm pretty sure they work for the first element of the array. And there's corresponding ones that do at the end. And it's an append.
I have to look up what the precise things, but the main thing about these methods, see, the way I program, often when I'm doing things, I look at references. I don't memorize all the methods. Like when I'm doing something, I'll use this and then I forget it. And I don't see a reason why not to, because honestly, if you're going between multiple programming languages, the exact syntax of each will depend on how much you use it. The thing to know is what's the capabilities of the programming language. And the key thing to know here is that arrays are variably sized objects. And you can access them, you can add things at the end, the beginning. Treat them as dynamic things. The main thing, the main difference between an array and an object, regular object, is that arrays have ordering of their properties. And they all have explicit, and they all have numeric values. You can't index into an object. Objects just have properties. You can index into an array. And it has things, but you can't push and pop onto an object. But otherwise, they're actually very similar because it's loosely typed. Any element of an array can be anything.
So, I'll just stop for questions. The next big thing I want to talk about was function invocation pattern. I didn't expect going through the code would take that long. We'll just go through that on Wednesday. But hopefully that makes the assignment a bit clearer what's happening there. But again, you're going to learn about Node as you play with it. Just do that, and then as you get pieces trying to fit together, ask those questions.
Is there a deadline, time-wise? Or to...
So,
is that the end
of the
day?
Normally I do midnight. Is that like 11:59?
So late Thursday at 12.
It's not the 26th anymore, right?
You push it back. Yeah, I pushed it back. It's not due this Thursday.
It's due on the 3rd, I believe. Yeah, which is a week. Yeah, which is. Yeah, assignment 1 is due. Where is it? There it is. October 3rd. Thank you.